Well, hello everyone. Another Wednesday night show for you. Let's start with our prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen.
What about for thine is the kingdom, the power? Why don't you say the rest of it, Joe?
Oh, well, you know,
Or is
there's a
that
difference between the Catholic version and
Baptist
that.
version?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So we don't have to, I mean, that prayer is said with
Oh, I didn't
Catholics.
know that. I didn't know y'all left a lot of it off.
Well, yeah, there's a debate about that, whether
Okay.
it's, but anyway, because we could talk about that sometime. All right, let me see if Larry is on here.
I'm here.
I see. There he is. Okay.
Oh, is Gary showing up?
Yeah. Okay, so Gary, you are unmuted, and there he
There he
is.
is. Hey guys.
So, Larry, do you still want to start off with a little bit, or you
Yeah,
want?
I think Joe, I sent you a link. And the last part of the link, it was the second email I sent to you tonight. It is equal pro or equal prot dot HTML. This stands for equal protection. And I'm going to go over to that website, that page. Have you found it, Joe?
No, I didn't know you sent me anything, so I gotta go find it.
It's the second email I sent to you dealing with equal protection. I think we mentioned something about it in an earlier program, but I was going back to see what I'd posted, and I found a case a case I like that really shows the proposition what we're talking about. And it has a direct relationship to two items that are real hot right now: national health care and the Second Amendment. And we need people to be conversant to understand these constitutional legal principles so that they can enter into the debate, assert an argument and educate others about the argument, because it's real important. But first, we have to have a large enough group that understands basic principles so that we can promote it. And that's what I'm doing with this particular issue, equal protection. So, Joe, did you get that file?
So it'd be the one. Okay, I see. Equal protection, another link was the second email.
That's right in line with due process, you know.
Absolutely. Now, Joe, you might want to pull that page up. God, Gary, you got gray hair.
I don't use Grecian formula.
That's okay, Gary. Neither do I.
Don't either.
It's not that gray, is it?
In 6 months, it's gotten grayer.
Hey, it wasn't gray when I met you first, you know. You must have been guilty of that.
There it is. Now, here's a point I want to make. And to me, it's real important, because we've had here in the last 10 years, two big issues that are of interest to a lot of people. It deals with the power of the government. And, I think that we need to have our American citizens educated about this particular principle that, especially if they're in opposition to, what's being promoted in way of national health care. But then also, this is an argument that just applies to the current debate on the Second Amendment. Now, the 14th Amendment it contains a command that the states cannot violate equal protection. And I'm going to discuss in a few minutes, and we're going to go down to a page or a spot on this page. It's got a real important quote that I want to use to assist in this discussion. But the 14th Amendment deals with denying equal protection. A state can't do it. Now, the equal protection principles, that is also a subset of due process. you know, there's not a whole lot of difference between due process and equal protection. So while there isn't any express equal protection prohibition that's applicable to the federal government, there is the due process clause of the Fifth Amendment, which incorporates principles of the equal protection. So equal protection applies both to state governments and the federal government. Now, here's what's going on in reference to the national healthcare debate. There's a certain segment of society. Let's you know, for purposes of example, let's say that 15% of the populace here in America is uninsured. But the rest of America, 85%, maybe even 80%, they're not causing any problem. They got insurance, you know, everything's hunky-dory for them. So the problem of being caused through the medical system is a result of there being uninsured people. That's the argument. I don't know whether it's true or not. It's got a ring of truth. It may be the case. It may not be the case. But that's what's being used to promote the takeover of the whole medical system. Well, but there's only a small part of the populace that causes the problem. And yet what they want to do is they want to attack all of America, every American, every citizen of America, and use some legal prohibitions applicable to everybody to try to solve a problem caused by a minority. That's point number one in reference to equal protection. Now let's get over the Second Amendment debate. You know, we've had here, you know, in the last, you know, 5 and 6 and 7 years, we've had these mass shootings. You know, most recently, we had several here in Texas, one in Ohio. You know, the Second Amendment, it says that, you know, the right of the people to keep and bear arms will not be infringed. Now, who's a part of the people? Well, the people are American citizens. And incidentally, if you go over to the front page of my website, I got a little link on Second Amendment, and you can go over to the Second Amendment page, and I've got these cases that talk about, yeah, hey, okay, may as well do it right now, Joe. Go down to the Second Amendment. This is real important. You know, here you can read cases of relevance, but go on down, Joe. There you go. But aliens, you know, you passed it. But aliens, go up a little bit. But aliens have no constitutional rights protected by the Second Amendment. So as to aliens, Congress can come along and pass any law. And if it's only applicable to them, it'll be perfectly constitutional. Why? Because aliens do not have any Second Amendment rights. But I just wanted to point that out in passing. Now, let's get back around to the Second Amendment. You know, the American people, which is all of us, we have Second Amendment rights. And we're all law-abiding people. You know, I've got guns. Joe, you've got guns. You know, we're not causing any problem with the guns that we possess. It is a minority. It's some, well, you know, you can read some real important articles that are floating around right now. And it seems like that these drugs, you know, psychotropic drugs that are being administered to some of these crazies, that may play a role in this problem that we got with these mass shootings. You know, I know maybe about 15 years ago here in the wintertime in Huntsville, Alabama, while it was snowing outside, you know, this kid in Jones Valley butchered his family. He was on Prozac. And of course, you know, we saw that evening news about this kid being arrested because he had butchered his mom, his dad, and one of his sisters. But you know, one of his brothers and sisters wasn't at home, so that party lived. But you know, he butchered the family, caused by Prozac. But then quietly later on, there was a lawsuit filed by that family against the makers of Prozac, and it was quietly settled. You know, like it's been going on in reference to other matters. But I digress. The point is that the American people that are law-abiding, that possess guns, they are not the cause of any problems. It's a minority of nuts and fruitcakes. So here we have this situation in reference to national health care. To solve a problem created by a minority, burdens have to be imposed upon, allegedly, everybody. Let's take the argument for that. But then in reference to the Second Amendment, there's a minority creating problems with guns. But the vast majority of people are not causing the problem. Yet to solve the problem created by a minority, we have to infringe upon the rights of everyone. Now let's go back down to, you know, get over to the that page that I had open, equal protection. That is what you've got on the screen. Is that absolutely correct?
That's just a resolution passed by San Francisco Board of Supervisors. Thought I'd illustrate what you're saying.
Yeah. Oh, declaring the NRA as a domestic terrorist organization. Wow. They are. And those are the people that are tripping out on Prozac.
That's got to be true.
Okay, Joe, you...
All right, I'm trying to get there. Let's see. Damn. Now I'm not able to find it. I've got it on my screen. Again.
You had it open a minute ago. It was equal protection. That was that link that ends, you know, it's the BCRAF, that link and equal. There it is. Okay. Oh, no, that's the Second Amendment stuff.
Yeah,
get back out of that.
Right here.
Yeah. Okay, now go down. We have a whole bunch of federal cases. Now, you know, if you want to know, equal protection is something that a lot of people that are patriotic, you need to know about these principles so that when something comes up, you're conversing with these legal principles and you can use these legal principles to, you know, address current problems that the American people confront. Now go down to, you know, here we have the federal cases. It's a long ways down. Go down about three quarters of the page. And I want to go to Nebraska because this Nebraska case really has refined into a couple of sentences, you know, the essence of what I'm talking about. I put in a lot of Alabama cases. Okay, there we go. State versus Michalski, 1985 case. This quote from this case really kind of is a condensation of these equal protection principles that I'm talking about. And over and now, the equal protection, you know, a legislature has the constitutional authority to address problems that crop up in their jurisdictions. So, and let's say you got a problem with drunk drivers, but drunk drivers are not all drivers. So if you pass a law to solve the drunk driving problem and make it apply to all drivers, that's an over-inclusive classification. However, if you want to solve a problem caused by drunk drivers, but then say only redheaded drunk drivers are the parties to whom this law applies, then that's an under-inclusive classification. Here's what's interesting about this, what I've got quoted. An over-inclusive classification, now this is dealing with the over-inclusive classifications and under-inclusive classifications, you're talking about equal protection principles. But an over-inclusive classification burdens a wider than necessary range of individuals, extending beyond those persons possessing the trait, contributing to the mischief or evil the legislature seeks to eradicate. So in our situation, they've been using drunk drivers. Let's say drunk drivers are causing a real problem for a particular state. They are the people, the drunk drivers are the people that can have the trait contributing to the mischief or evil the legislature seeks to eradicate. But if you extend, you know, if you want to solve this drunk driving problem caused by drunk drivers, but wanted to apply it to all drivers, then you're extending it to a wider range of individuals and encompassing persons that, oh, gee, Joe. Got my wife called. An over-inclusive classification burdens a wider than necessary range of individuals. extending beyond the persons possessing the trait, contributing to the mischief or evil that the legislature seeks to eradicate. Good grief.
Please leave my wife call. And I will return your call as soon as I possibly can.
Good. An under-inclusive classification exists when all persons in the class are indeed perpetrators of the mischief or evil the state wishes to eliminate, but others who possess the same undesirable trait remain outside the class. So that means in our drunk driving situation that if you pass a law, you know, to address the problem of drunk drivers, but say that this law to solve the drunk driving problem only applied to, you know, drunk drivers that had red hair, then that is an under-inclusive classification. So what the legislature has to do, and this is, you can see it every now and then in reference to the current debate regarding, you know, like gun control, you know, like to address this last situation, you know, the Democrats want to come around and impinge, have legislation to impinge upon everybody's Second Amendment rights. They're going to impose burdens upon people they're not contributing to. They're not in the, they don't possess the trait that the legislature is attempting to address. Those that would have a great propensity to be involved in a mass shooting. That isn't us. So we can't be the subject of that type of legislation. And that's the reason why every now and then you see some of these Republican proposals saying, well, hey, what the legislature, what the Democrats are proposing, you know, simply wouldn't address, wouldn't have any effect upon, you know, like the situation in El Paso, the guy that did that there. And those are the guys that are talking about that are using real constitutional principles. They're focusing in on the problem. And if a certain segment of society is causing a problem, you pass legislation applicable to that segment of society, nobody else. And that's my constitutional lesson for the day. Now we can, I guess, go on to Gary.
Thank you, Larry. Gary?
Good points, Larry. I was interested a month or so ago and started reading the equal protection as well as the due process together. And it's just really nice and as well as ironic that you raise it and bring it up, because it is a very, very important aspect of understanding our rights.
True.
And then you know, Larry and I do a radio program on Fridays, and from time to time we'll put a kind of a tax issue as the item of interest for the program at the time. And from time to time, you know, I would bring up these IRS publications. And even though we're not, you know, talking about the law per se, we're talking about some of the procedure and some of the guidance that the IRS may give us in these publications. One of my favorites is this publication 515. And if everybody wants to get a notepad and a pen or pencil, I'm going to rattle off some publications that I think are very revealing. And you can peruse those at your leisure. But this publication 515, you can see that it's dated 2018, and you can see that the publication itself is almost a book. It's like 55 pages. The 2019 version of this document is hundreds. It's like 290 pages. So they've expanded the scope of this publication, not from the reach of what the law says, but basically to, in my opinion, confuse everybody, because this particular one, as you can see that the title of it, at first blush, it says it's discussing withholding of tax on non-resident alien foreign entities such as foreign corporations or foreign tax exempt organizations. And so if you read it in context of, you know, say, hey, I've been reading the code, I've been reading the regs, and this withholding of tax on non-resident aliens, foreign corporations, foreign tax-exempt organizations. That's the definition of a withholding agent, ladies and gentlemen. So they're talking about the withholding laws as well as the information reporting and who the tax applies to. So this publication 515 is extremely, extremely important in terms of warming you up to how the subtitle A income tax operates. And like I said, look at the 2019 one. I want to say that it's, it was 292 pages. It's just ridiculous.
Gary, I didn't get a chance to check with you before the show, but you had a version, like an HTML version. So see if I could, I think that was this one.
Yes, 281 pages. Yeah, that's it, Joe. But as you guys read this, if you study this one particular IRS publication, this deals with chapter 3 of subtitle A of the Internal Revenue Code. And believe me, a lot of the material that they furnish us in this particular publication is very, very accurate. But I think what they also did is they have included in it what's called FATCA, which is, I just refer to it as a foreign account transactions. And that's in chapter 4 of the Internal Revenue Code and the withholding of income tax on non-resident foreign corporations, tax exempt organizations is chapter 3 of the code. Those are very important if you're going to be doing any business outside, if you have bank accounts outside the United States. Chapter 4 of the code is going to be very, very crucial to you understanding how the information reporting provisions operate in terms of the foreign account, foreign bank accounts. And this is one publication, 515. The 2018 version, I think, is personally, I would say, read the 2018 version. And you can also go back and at the IRS website, and you could download previous years. So if you've ever got a letter from our favorite tax gatherer for, say, 2010, you can refer to the publication for 2010. When you're corresponding with the IRS. So instead of reading through it and pointing out certain things, I would say, if you with your notepad in front of you, when you're doing word searches, I would suggest that you press down the little CTRL button on your computer, and the letter F, it'll bring up a search box. And this one's got a search box. Joe, why don't we just put in U period, S period, person. And you're gonna learn a lot about how the income tax operates by just simply looking at the title of a document from time to time.
Now, a person includes an individual, a trust, blah, blah, blah.
That's correct.
A U.S. person is defined as including a citizen.
Citizen.
Citizen or resident.
That is absolutely correct, y'all. So when we look at this, you got it's got it listed by pages, but if you look at the number of times the word U.S. or a U.S. person appears. I want to say it was 90-something times when I did the search, but this grabbed everything, persons and U.S. persons. But the long and the short of it is when you see that I'm bringing in a very legal term called U.S. person, and look at the title of the document, withholding a tax on non-resident aliens. So why would the IRS, and I'm just, this is a, you know, it's just a little question. Why is the IRS putting U.S. persons in a publication dealing with the tax, withholding a tax on non-resident alien? Is that insane, or is it just, is there a purpose behind it? I think I'll leave that question for you to answer. But as you go through and read Publication 15, it ties right in with Chapter 3 of the Code, of Subtitle A. And, you know, we have these conversations from time to time on the radio program, and, you know, we'll point out, and, you know, Larry's been, sharing this information for decades. But if you haven't heard it yet, Subtitle A, Section 1 of the Code, is where the federal income tax is imposed. The tax is imposed in Section 1. The second part that we should be aware of is that who's made liable for that tax? You would think that it'd be the next section, like, well, maybe Section 2 would have the person liable for the tax, and perhaps even, you know, the rate of tax. But in Subtitle A, the federal income tax is imposed on the taxable income of individuals. Section 1. 1,461 sections later, you're going to find the person made liable for that tax. And so when you read just the title of this publication, Withholding of Tax on Non-Resident Aliens and Foreign Entities. Withholding would be the withholding agent's obligation to withhold this tax on non-resident aliens and foreign entities. Does anybody have any questions about that? Be happy to field some questions on it. And I would only toss in that sometimes it's better to see what is not being told as opposed to what is being told to us. Withholding of tax on non-resident aliens and foreign entities. And I've seen arguments, Larry, Joe, we've all seen these arguments where people are claiming to be a non-resident alien, or they're claiming not to be a citizen, so on and so forth. And I always just kind of say it lightheartedly without getting in anybody's face, is that one of these days you're going to find out that you're a United States person and you're going to like it. Pretty much leave it at that. If you were born in the United States of America and you're living in the United States of America, be proud.
So, Gary, did you see Peter's question on the chat?
Let me see here.
I can read it to you.